Tech of Sports, episode 95, Luis Rincon of Wearables.com. This week on the Tech of Sports, Luis Rincon of Wearables.com. Netcast Studio mobile apps are a great way to receive our content on your smart devices. And there's an app for both iOS and Android. Don't forget the Stitcher Radio app, where Netcast Studio shows are all preloaded for devices. The Tech of Sports is a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network at techpodcast.com. If it's tech, it's here. And the Tech of Sports is a production of Netcast Studio at netcaststudio.com. We record every Wednesday at 7 p.m. Eastern, 4 p.m. Pacific. This is available the next day at netcaststudio.com for download, embed, and streaming. So we make it available as soon as possible. A hosting special, Bluehost Web Hosting is a partner here at the network, and you can check and see what they have going on at netcaststudio.com/Bluehost Special. I'd like to welcome everybody tonight to the Tech of Sports, 1 week removed from CES in Vegas, and one of the big stars of CES were wearables, wearable technology, fitness bands, smartwatches, all that type of thing. So we're bringing an expert on to just kind of get his opinion and his thoughts on what happened and what everybody saw. There were dozens and dozens of new and current companies debuting wearables at the show, and attendees just were eating it all up. And we're joined tonight by Luis Rincon, of CEO of Wearables.com. He's an expert who offers an unbiased view of the devices in the wearable space. He knows wearables, and we'll maybe also talk about a survey that his company did with the Center for Generational Kinetics on consumer trends in the wearables market as we move through the show. So, Luis, thanks for coming on, and you're in the same boat as me. We're trying to recover from a little illness from CES.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, as we were talking about earlier, it's a lot of people in a actually, it's quite a big space, but somehow when it's that many people, it feels like a small space. Two locations this year was just unbelievable. It was a great show, though. I always love going.
Three locations, Luis.
What's the third one that I'm missing out? So we had the Sands Expo, the Convention Center,
and the Aria. They had taken over the whole convention space of the Aria for all the social media stuff and all that stuff.
You're right. I stand corrected. Yeah. I mean, last I heard it was something like 190,000 attendees, which is just mind blowing.
So 3,000 or more exhibitors. And they said if they put into football fields all the convention space, it was over 35 football fields.
Oh, wow. Well, I believe it. You know, I mean, being there, it's one of the most stimulating environments you could possibly be in. There's not a shortage of blinking lights and people walking around you, but it's always great. I always tell people, it's not like stepping into the future, like the Jetsons future. It's more like stepping into the future 2 to 3 years from now. So it gives you a really good insight into what's coming down the pipeline. And of course, you get exposure to a lot of cool things that never hit the market, but then you also get some kind of wacky, crazy gadgets. That it's just always fun to see those too.
They're all over the place. And hopefully the wearables, maybe you guys can do a study on this for next year. The increase in wearables maybe increase the amount of people that got sick at the show. Is there a connection between wearables and you know, people trying on wearables and people getting sick? That would be quite interesting.
You may have just created a new use case for wearables. What about one that alerts you if somebody, you know, if somebody else is wearing one and their body temperature is slightly elevated? It alerts you saying, you know, kind of stranger danger to your left. Don't go near that person. They're sniffling. I probably would have used that one to duck into some alleyways at CES.
It'll be an aisle 7,000 at the Sands Expo next year, probably. Yeah, let's just kind of talk about your impressions of what you saw at the show. When it came to wearable technology, I before Christmas I had reviewed 12 or 13 different devices, and you know, I thought that was a pretty good representation. But when I got to the show, there were 3-4 dozen new companies or new devices I had never even heard of or had seen yet. So I was pleasantly surprised to see the variety and the different styles and looks and what. Kind of, you know, what people's ideas are when it comes to wearables, what they think is important. Did you kind of have the same feel?
I totally had the same feel. The last stat that we saw, and it's really hard to quantify outside of what CE as an organization offers you, but the last stat I saw was over 1,200 companies that were identifying themselves, maybe not solely as wearable tech, but at least including themselves within wearable tech, which is mind blowing, especially given the growth that it sees year over year. You know, last year it was a real big buzzword, and it was great for us because, you know, as wearables.com, it's very easy to remember our brand name. But this year you really saw it grow into a category. I was lucky enough to attend one of the sessions with one of the business intelligence reporters from CE, and they are actually estimating that by 2018, I believe, wearables will account for nearly 5% of the U.S. consumer electronics revenue, which is, you know, massive from considering that this is a industry that about 2 years ago was really just sort of a Kickstarter dream. Even though in wearable tech as an industry has been around for quite some time, the evolution of sensors and the technology has really sort of gotten a lot more traction over the last 2 to 3 years. So it was great to see all that. Definitely overwhelming at times, and I'm in the industry, so I can only imagine what it's like for someone who's not, and someone who's trying to make sense of the whole situation on their own. You know, just walking down the aisles, we were able to chat with, you know, we got a good percentage of conversations with the wearable tech companies. We definitely had a divide and conquer mentality, and I'm always interested to see, you know, you're going to get technology from the big guys. You know, Under Armour is going to do something big. They announced their UA record. iFit took over such a large. Did you happen to catch that one? They had like a show replaying every 15 minutes with live athlete actors. Yep. Yeah. So doing like backflips on treadmills and stuff. That was a great one. And, you know, Fitbit's going to do big stuff. Garmin's going to do big stuff. I'm always really excited to see the smaller, more unknown guys. And while they may be known to me, I say unknown sort of in comparison. There was a great one, I don't know if you checked it out, called MyVert. I really enjoyed them.
I got a piece up on it today. Yeah, I got it. It's a neat little device.
Yeah, it looks like sort of one of the first versions of the Fitbit that came out in 2008, I believe, 2007. And it's just clipped on your waistband, or they actually sell a specific waistband if you want to do that. And it's measuring the impact and I believe just height of your jumps. And, you know, specifically right now they're targeting basketball players. And I think they were actually at the combine for the NBA. But, you know, that's obviously really applicable in other sports as well. Track and field, volleyball. And, you know, that's obviously a niche market, but that's a great use of technology to get people, specifically in this case, athletes, access to data about themselves that they didn't have before. And I'm always excited to see the innovators that are saying, you know what, everyone's going to try to sell Luis's mom and Luis's dad and Luis's brother, who are the general consumers, a wrist-worn activity tracker. But, you know, there's this great market right here that has very specific needs. You know, I'm always wondering, like, when are people going to come out with the bowling wearable? You know, like, I want to see those.
Well, they had a tennis one. I cover a lot of tennis, so I was shocked that CES unveiled to see a tennis smartwatch. So my concern, Luis, though, is these are really niche markets for these devices, where a lot of research and technology goes into them. Are they going to kind of cannibalize themselves if, you know, if people see companies not making it, mm-hmm. that have a real niche type wearable, will that discourage others from, you know, getting into the space, and will that hurt competition? So, I mean, that's kind of the unknown side right now.
Certainly. I certainly believe you find your niches, you find your riches. And with wearable tech, though, I totally agree with your statement that there is going to be some cannibalization. We already saw it this year at CES. You know, last year, the fitness trackers were all the buzz. And this year, it was smartwatches. They stole the show, along with some really great competition from augmented reality glasses and virtual reality glasses. Go ahead.
And the Apple Watch isn't even out yet. So
it's not even out. Yeah, Apple's always like the 800-pound gorilla at CES, even though they're never at CES. Isn't that funny?
Oh, yeah. I mean, but, you know, everybody knows it's coming, but it just kind of amused me a little bit to see all the Android smartwatches, you know, them really pushing them out hard. because I think they know what's coming, and you know, the Apple tribe will embrace that Apple Watch, which I'm sure is going to be a really nice device.
Absolutely. We're excited to get our hands on it too. But at the same time, you just said there was a lot of Android devices, and I know some guys, I know quite a few actually, that are diehard Android guys. And to them, they've been wearing the Moto 360 for quite some time now, and they say, why would I switch? This is great. Of course, there are battery life issues with just about every smartwatch, probably with the exception of the Pebble Steel. But I do think there's going to be a market outside of the Apple Watch. I think, if anything, the Apple Watch is great for the industry, specifically smartwatches. I do think there's going to be cannibalization within the general mass consumer activity trackers. I mean, you were there just walking around the halls. How many just run-of-the-mill wrist-based activity trackers do you think you saw?
Well, that's not a fair question, Luis, because that is a show where, it's not, not your normal person really at that at the show. I saw not as many as I thought I was going to see.
Really?
Let's say that. Not saying there wasn't a lot, but I think I switch out and wear different ones from time to time, and I kind of test them. I'm always testing one and having fun with it. And I saw other people in the same boat, but I saw people, I would say over the age of 45 or so, were not wearing any fitness tracker band, where under 40, I would say yes, there was a great deal more. So I think we have that age divide.
Yeah. Totally. And there's a lot of issues with the 40 and above and 50 and above and even 60 and above. Are they able to read the screen? Is there even a screen? The ease of putting something on, and then also just ease of setting up. I totally agree with your point.
Before we move on, what's the best Android wearable you saw, Luis, or your favorite, and maybe the best fitness one that you saw?
Sure. So in terms of Android, I'm still a big fan of the Moto 360. I didn't see anything that I thought from a smartwatch perspective was.
Did you see Berg?
Oh yeah, checked out Berg. They have a lot. I mean, wow, do they have a lot of offerings and great stuff? Truthfully, they have a lot of great stuff. In terms of smartwatch, the one that I just thought crushed it earlier in 2014 was the Withings Activité, and I thought they did a phenomenal job by launching the Withings Activité Pop. Did you happen to check that out at CES?
I saw it just briefly. There was a big crowd around that.
Yeah. So the Activité retails for nearly $500. It comes in essentially black or white face with brown or black leather. And, that's definitely a premium watch price for a lot of people, especially the younger people. So what they did was they came out with one with three different colors. I believe presently three, like a blue, a white, an all black one. And this is sort of their more affordable version. It retails for less than half the Activité. And it's just colorful. It's fun. It's got a good name, Pop. But the functionality, they didn't lose any of that. I was really impressed. I had the Activité in one hand and the Pop in the other, or excuse me, Activité Pop in the other. And they did a great job of reducing the price point and making it fun. I think they're going to see a lot of traction with the younger market there. And in terms of fitness, broad fitness, there was actually I don't know if you had an opportunity to check out Huawei, Huawei.
I know who they are. I didn't see that one, though.
Yeah. So they have a all-purpose fitness tracker called the TalkBand 1. And the reason it's called that is, it looks like most wrist-worn ones do. It's got a little screen on it that'll, if you tap it, it'll go to your steps. And if you tap it, it'll go to the time, and if you tap it, it'll go to your calories burned. But you can actually press a button that's located on the wrist strap, and it'll pop that module out, and you can pull it out, and it looks identical to, well, it is a Bluetooth headset. And you can pop it in your ear, and there you go, you have a headset. So, it's taking, that was, that one had been out before CES, but it was my first time seeing it in person, and it's great to see, people thought, okay, Bluetooth headsets, that's one wearable. Activity trackers, that's one wearable. Well, smartwatches, that's going to take over activity trackers. Nobody really thought, well, what about if we combine an earpiece, which is outside of the wrist-worn activity? And I tried it. The guy called me while I had it in my ear. Perfect sound. And then as soon as that was done, I popped it right back in my wrist. If they come out with some sort of accessory for that, say, you know, because that's only one ear, if they come out with an accessory that you can keep in your gym bag where you just plop it right on your other ear and that one goes in here and now you have full audio head or audio headphones through Bluetooth connection. And then when you're done, you pop it right back on your wrist for that, you know, constant tracking throughout the day. I think they really have something super unique. And I wasn't expecting that out of Huawei.
A lot of the Chinese companies are really on the verge of a lot of big things, I think. So companies like Hisense. And so those are definitely things to watch. People that you don't, we're not really all that familiar with on a day-to-day basis here in this country. So we're with Luis Rincon of wearables.com. And Luis, as we move on here, I got a quote from you or a quote that you had given in a release. And we'll just talk about this for a second. This comes back to personal information being shared. You said that customers say they would feel comfortable sharing personal information if it offered a better user experience. Where do you currently stand on the gathering of personal information and what the companies maybe do with it from these devices? And is that still going to be a barrier for some people that don't want, they want privacy, they have privacy issues, and that may keep them from getting a wearable?
Yeah, great question. I think that within the wearable technology market, especially consumer, or I should say specifically consumer, that is a probably the most pertinent question. You know, even this week, President Obama has been making a lot of statements around the, I believe his exact slogan, which is brilliant, is if we're going to be connected, we must be protected. Whoever is writing his speeches continues to do a good job with the sort of rhyming pieces. But I do think that they, if the government's already starting to pay attention to this at the federal level, you know, we've had consumer data be breached on the retail level, say Home Depot, Target, Lowe's in last year. Apple Pay just got released, which is going to be integrated with a lot of smartwatches. You better believe that, especially the Apple Watch. I think security around the data that's being created, and not just from the data that you're creating through your movement, but the data through how you're using these wearables, especially if you're using third-party apps, that does need to be better protected. I think that's a great business opportunity within the wearable tech space. I do think that we need to see a better move towards transparency about how data is used. I still haven't seen a great example, sad to say, in the space of someone saying, you know, I would envision it almost like a if this, then that sort of diagram. If you connect with us, here's, you know, if our connection, then here's the data that we're getting, and here's how it flows through our system. And here's who we resell it to if we do resell it, or here's who we don't resell it to. If you connect to, say you have a smartwatch, and I'm wearing a Pebble Steel right now as we speak, I have the ESPN app on here. I also have the Jawbone app on here, Jawbone Up, saying if you connect to third party and then you select which third party that is, it'll actually tell you here's how they use their data. I think there's a great opportunity for not just wearable tech, but smartphone companies as well to represent that data in a visual way through the connections that you have on your connected devices. So the consumers become a lot more aware of how that data is being used. I'm a big believer that technology, connected devices are a net win. You know, I shopped at Home Depot, I shop at Home Depot, I shop at Target, and I received the email from them saying my information had, or, you know, most likely had been breached. And I went through all the proper protocols, I changed my passwords, but I'm still shopping at Home Depot, and I'm still shopping at Target, and I'm still using the same credit cards. You know, I reissued some new ones, but overall, that is a win for me. And what I'm trying to say here with that quote that you mentioned is that when consumers start seeing the value, whether it be through to lower health insurance premiums, improved physical activity, physical stamina, or maybe even just convenience that's coming, say, with smartwatches, perhaps with, I think a little later on in a few years, augmented reality glasses, they're going to say, yeah, this is good. I value this convenience or this, whatever this value that I'm getting at, I value that enough to know that they're using my data, but it's valuable to me. The other thing too is consumers can become empowered by it and say, you know, if the consumers as a whole came together and said, we will not allow you to track our data, these companies will stop tracking your data. right now it's being done because it's allowed.
People are never going to get organized like that, you know.
Well, we can be optimistic, right? But I do think that
depends on what's important to you. I mean, like you said, it's you know, it's win-win for some people, and for other people, they're, you know, I understand their paranoia a little bit.
Oh, totally, totally. And we're talking about some very sensitive data, especially with sleep patterns and
fitness things and medical ID bracelets and things like that. So
absolutely, absolutely. Yeah,
things are changing slowly.
Yeah, absolutely. I've been following the NBA specifically about it because there are some, and I'm blanking on the player. I know that it was Shane Battier who had some commentary around it that, you know, he's a pretty forward-thinking guy and refused to use constant activity monitoring that would be viewed by the Miami Heat because he was concerned, well, you know, what happened? I'm a married man. You know, this is him speaking. He's a married man. When he goes to bed, you guys shouldn't have any insight into what happens in my bedroom. And just by me wearing an activity tracker, you guys would, and I could see how that could bother someone. And this is a guy who his body was his job, you know, at multiple levels. And I could see where the team even thought, well, this is an investment. And as sort of as objective and harsh as it sounds, it's an investment in an asset. And that gets, you know, the consumers are even less objective about it. So it's definitely a very, very important area that I look forward to hopefully being a part of forming the right steps forward.
That'll be a lot of questions to be answered and asked and answered coming up on that. And we just take a quick break here, Luis, for one of our other partners here at the network. It's Amazon.com. And if people are doing any shopping on Amazon here in the coming weeks or months, you can go to netcaststudio.com/Amazon for any and all of your shopping needs. There's no extra cost to you for going to that link. You just put that link in and do all your regular Amazon shopping, and it helps the studio out here cover some of the expenses it has putting on all sorts of great shows that each week. So go to netcaststudio.com/Amazon and have them help the studio out here by just doing your normal shopping, and Amazon is a very valued partner here at Netcast Studio. And one other little thing here, if you get a chance and you are listening to the show maybe on the iTunes podcast download, leave a rating and a review in iTunes for the Tech of Sports or any other Netcast Studio shows. It really helps out the search of these shows, and it helps make the other people at the studio here feel really good about having positive ratings and reviews. So appreciate that. And Luis, got just a couple other things we'll wrap up here. It kind of maybe came to light this week, and I had been talking about this a little bit with some people. The fitness band industry, is it preying on women's vulnerabilities and insecurities? This is something that's also going to have to be answered here. The way they're targeting these fitness devices to women is a little questionable in some of the ways they're doing it. And when you hear some of the companies talk about it, they maybe are going to have to rethink a few things. Have you... you guys studied this or talked and thought about this at all?
So just to clarify, can you provide a couple of examples? And you don't have to name any companies, but perhaps some of the tactics that you've seen?
Well, just the way they use, and this is in advertising in general, you know, all the women that appear in ads or in the, whether it's online or in print, they all have the perfect body type. And, you know, and just the way that they market these, I mean, and there's actually a little information that's come out this week on it. And this is a bigger issue than just wearables. I know this is a marketing and a women's issue. But have you you guys talked about this at all?
Sure. Anytime that you're going to be selling fitness devices, as you will know, a large part of the advertising and marketing tends to be aspirational marketing. It's sort of like a here's what is possible, right? Because the underlying message that they're hoping consumers get is if you buy this device and, you know, participate in whatever activity through the app that we promote, you can look like this, or the people who look like this are using the app. Therefore, most likely you can as well. I do agree with you that there are some ethical lines that need to be drawn as to, you know, are we causing some sort of body image issue, not just with females, but teenagers as well, both male and female.
There is a company, Luis, that runs an ad with a male in it, and the male is not the ideal body type. And the same company runs they show the woman, and she is the, you know, she would be what one would classify as the, you know, an ideal or the aspirational body type. So are we always going to have this difference between the way things are marketed to men and women, even in wearables?
Yeah, that's a great question. I don't know if we always will. I think we're starting to see more brands. You know, it's unfortunate that that brand chose to differentiate like that. Hopefully it was just a oversight on their behalf, nothing purposeful. We're starting to see brands, for example, Sprouling, I believe, had a great commercial. Their YouTube commercial, they're a wearable baby monitor, and it's an intelligent device that you can put on your child that will alert you of certain body temperature rises, yep, movement. And they did a great job of actually, you think that they would show, you know, these parents who are just so on top of their job and look at this new device they got, and if they're using it, you should be using it too. And they, you know, they look perfect and look at what they're doing when they work out. Instead, they painted a really accurate picture. It's two parents, you know, pushing each other in the middle of the night. No, it's your turn to get up. No, it's your turn to get up. Arguing about it. You know, one of them getting a piece of food thrown in their face when they're trying to feed the baby, you know, sort of just showing reality. And I think the fact that wearable tech on the consumer side is a net win. It's trying to get people to be more active and show you information about your device, or in this case, your body, in this case, your child's body. There's not a shortage of ways that advertisers and marketers can benefit from saying, hey, here's what the normal dude or the normal girl who wears a Fitbit looks like, or a Jawbone, or you name it, you know, your selection of fitness device. And here's how they're using it, and here's how they've seen benefits. And they can make it comical. I'm a huge believer that comedy is always the best way to sell these devices, especially, man, there was some funny stuff with New Year's resolutions, you know, and I didn't really see a whole lot coming from the wearable tech space. I was sort of disappointed. I was looking forward to seeing that. So to answer your question, I don't think we'll see it. I certainly hope we won't always see it. And I hope people start leveraging sort of this real image, comical angle. But I do think the aspirational stuff has its place too, as long as it's done tactfully.
I hope so as well. Went very well put. And Luis, we always give our guests a chance to give their contact information if the listeners and viewers want to contact or follow you and whatever else you want to promote. This is your chance. Take the stage.
Absolutely. So first of all, thanks for having us, guys. So we are wearables.com. We help you make sense of wearable tech. Easiest way to stay in touch is to go to our website and join our email newsletter. We put out all the devices that we're adding to our database. We add about 6 to 10 devices per week. That's how quick this space is growing. And we also add the companies. And then we showcase that along with news in our email newsletter. Be sure to follow us on Twitter at wearables.com. And that's WEARABLESDOTCOM. So we spell out the dot. We also showcase all of our stuff through there. If you're at all interested in finding out what the best wearable tech is, the most recent news, contributing reviews and device information, check us out, wearables.com. We're happy to have you. We're happy to help you make sense of wearable tech.
Great. And Luis, you just want to give a couple sentences or a Cliff Notes version on maybe a couple of your findings from that survey that you recently had with the Center for Generational Kinetics on consumer trends. I know a lot of them were just kind of, I read some of it, were just kind of logical trends, but anything really stick out to you?
Yeah, you know, the going back to the male versus female item, you know, I was actually quite surprised by some of the differences there. We act what would motivate you to wear wearable tech if it affected your appearance? And males were actually more interested in looking smarter, and females cared less if the technology is socially acceptable, which I guess means that maybe the males are feeling a little insecure. They want to look smarter, whereas the females are empowered and aren't so necessarily concerned with what others think of it, which I definitely found surprising. You know, other information that we found that was really exciting was ways that people were hoping to use wearable tech. Over 50%, in fact, 52% of the people we surveyed, which are representative of the American population, said that they would use wearable technology at work. And we're starting to see more enterprise use these, but I'm really excited to see what happens when smartwatches really gain traction and how employers will start using that at the office.
That's potentially huge.
Very, very huge. You know, the smart eyeglass market, think Google Glass and Vuzix and Epson, they have seen without a doubt their largest amount of traction within the enterprise. People, especially think like surgeons or just doctors, people who need access to both hands, but still need access to real-time information. Now they have it directly in front of their face, and they've seen huge benefits from that. On the wearables.com survey, one last piece that, you know, this was sort of fortuitous timing for us. The Apple Watch was announced, I believe it was September 9th is the exact date, and we launched this in October. So we asked, what are the other brands, big brands, that consumers are really hoping launch wearable tech? And what are the specific wearable tech they're hoping for? And the responses were over a third wanted Nike to launch smart clothing, which is awesome. If you think about smart clothing, clothing that has sensors built throughout it, think your shirt while you're working out.
There was some of that at the show.
A ton of that. And that's really a really interesting space to keep your eye on, especially you that you operate in the sports tech world. And then smart sunglasses, Ray-Ban actually took the medal there. Nearly 40% of respondents want Ray-Ban to come out with some sort of smart sunglasses. And we didn't even define smart sunglasses. We just let the people being interviewed run with it. Smartwatch, Rolex, everybody still wants that Rolex. They're going back to that aspirational marketing. And then the wearable camera, you know, we saw a couple wearable cameras announced at CES. Sony announced one. Canon, surprisingly to us, we were expecting maybe GoPro to, you know, that is their bread and butter. We thought they would take it. Canon, you know, consumers are saying, we'll buy it if Canon comes out with a wearable camera.
Yeah, and I'll be heading to the golf show next week, and I've already got some little hints and some tips. There's going to be some stuff maybe that wasn't at CES, even some wearable golf stuff that'll be announced, including a potential smart pair of sunglasses from another sunglass manufacturer that's not Ray-Ban. So we'll take notes and see what that is like. And unless they're just trying to get things hyped up a little bit, just like the CES show, the golf show, a lot of these things may never come out, or you won't see them until, you know, the summer golf season gets ready to hit. So they do a lot of teasing you. But Luis, great information, and I'm glad you made it back from CES in one piece. And you I'm envious of you having a team out there. You guys could divide and conquer. I was one guy trying to get around.
Yeah, it's a beast. It's tough to tackle on your own. Next year, I'm sure. There's got to be some intern for the show that is just dying for you to take them with you. And it's always great to divide and conquer with something that's that big. And, you know, it's a lot of fun to get different people's perspectives on it. And I'm glad you enjoyed it. Hopefully you recover as much as I do now that we're out of it. And best of luck at the golf show.
Yeah, no problem. And I invite everyone to follow what Luis has going on at wearables.com on Twitter. That's a great follow. And Luis, I always ask my guests one last question as we wrap up. What's the current piece of technology maybe you would say is your favorite or that you can't live without right now?
Oh, man, this is going to sound so lame. It's not even connected or really even that great. It is my juice pack. So I have a portable battery pack, and I can tell you right now, having returned from CES, where, you know, outlets are this worshipped territory and you got to keep fighting people for outlets, I was strolling right by at night, plug in my juice pack, gives me an extra 8 hours of battery. I carry it in my backpack whenever I needed to charge my phone, which is probably 6 times a day at CES because you're using it so much there to take pictures and have conversations. Plugged it right in, put my juice pack in my back pocket, keep walking. Underrated consumer electronic, costs you $20. Go out and buy yourself one. You'll love it.
Did you see the lightning pack at CES, Luis?
I did not. What was the lightning pack?
The lightning pack is the size of a little external battery pack, but it has enough juice in it, enough power in it to jump 10 cars.
Oh, wow. Geez, wow. I'd almost feel concerned having that in my back pocket.
Yeah. Your regular little battery packs will recharge your phone and your iPad. This one will also, you know, recharge numerous laptops, and for $129, it's wow! This is quite a thing. It comes with little jumper cables, even that I swear to God, it comes and it'll jump. But the guy said it carries enough juice to jump 10 cars, 10 boats, motorcycles, whatever you want.
That's incredible, man! You know, the juice pack I carry is essentially for my phone and also for my iPad. But I definitely was feeling the pain every now and then with my MacBook out there. I could have used one that would charge that. I might have to look into this Lightning Pack.
Yep, look into the Lightning Pack, and they're good people, and it's so far just a fantastic product. Probably one of my favorite products from the show. So, Luis, thanks for coming on. We'll have you on again some point this year if you want when you guys have something new coming out. But just great information. Thanks.
Yeah, absolutely. We're more than happy to provide insight to you and your followers around wearable tech, again, at wearables.com. And, you know, if you guys are really interested in any new announcements, obviously the Apple Watch is going to change a lot of things in consumer electronics. We're more than happy to provide our opinion come that.
Thanks. Thanks, Luis. As we wrap up here, just want to let everyone know that Netcast Studio has many other shows which may be of interest to you. You can go over to netcaststudio.com and check out all the content that's available. And also Two Thumbs Up Media, twothumbsupmedia.com, the podcast directory set up by the people at Netcast Studio, where you can discover new shows, podcasts, and internet broadcasts right online. So thanks for tuning in to hear Luis on the show. You've been listening to the Tech of Sports podcast on Netcast Studio production.